And that was something that the Federalists feared. They felt that you needed a strong central force within the executive to lead the country. Hamilton proves prescient on this. For Jefferson actually had tighter control over both his cabinet and his Congress than even Washington had. I want to keep going. It is a fact which I have frequently mentioned that while we were in the administration together, he was generally for a large construction of the executive authority and not backward to act upon it in cases which coincided with his views. And that's the key. Right? For Jefferson, it's not always just procedural constitutional issues. It's the larger vision. It's the larger policies that will impact the nation. To my mind, a true estimate of Mr. Jefferson's character warrants the expectation of a temporizing rather than a violent system. And this is important because a lot of that rhetoric of 1800 had seen or tried to portray Jefferson as a Jacobin, as the American Robespierre, as a man who would begin guillotining as soon as he entered office. But Hamilton, although he had in fact preferred that sort of outrageous and frankly libelous charge, knew better, knew that in fact Jefferson's bark was worse than his bite. His rhetoric was much more extreme than his practice, that in reality he would always be guided by experience and by the art of the possible. That Jefferson has manifested a culpable predilection for France is certainly true. But I think it a question whether it did not proceed quite as much from her popularity among us as from sentiment. And in proportion as that popularity is diminished, his zeal will cool. Again, Hamilton is prescient. He's exactly right. I mean, he's wrong to think that it was just for partisan reasons that Jefferson embraced the French Revolution. He was sincere in his convictions that it was a cause of liberty. But he's not wrong in noting that once that becomes a political liability, Jefferson has the acumen and unerring judgment to jettison it. Add to this, and this is critical, and add to this that there is no fair reason to suppose him capable of being corrupted. And that's his ultimate tribute to Jefferson. He may be a fanatic, he may be a Francophile, he may have no conception of how to run a debt, of how to finance the United States, of how to deal with problems abroad, but he's incorruptible. He's an honest and sincere man. It is not at all improbable that under the change of circumstances, Jefferson's gallicism has considerably abated. And we have seen that, in fact, right? In that letter he wrote earlier to, I think it was Thomas Lomax, stating that, you know, France has acted horribly towards us and we need to be independent. He writes to Gouverneur Morris. Another subject. Jefferson or Burr, the former without all doubt. The latter, in my judgment, has no principle, public or private, could be bound by no agreement, will listen to no monitor but his ambition. Let our situation be improved to obtain from Jefferson assurances on certain points. The maintenance of the present system, especially on the cardinal articles of public credit, a navy, neutrality. Make any discreet use you may think fit of this letter. So Hamilton is reaching out to the entire Federalist network, trying to make sure that the momentum for Burr is checked and repealed. And in fact, Bayard claims that he did get those assurances from Jefferson before he finally switched votes. But I say that not as a swipe at Jefferson, but rather as credit to Hamilton, because Burr had offered those promises very early on in the debate or in the process. What's important here is to recognize that Hamilton is arguing only Jefferson's word can be trusted. Burr will say whatever is necessary to take power. And what I think this reveals is that Jefferson had sorely misread his opponent's character and his opponent's adherence to high-minded principle. And it also suggests something else, that in some ways, Hamilton and Jefferson were not only opponents, they were the sort of opponents who were both sincere in their convictions and created a healthy, if nonetheless vitriolic, partisan dispute. Both were sincere, both high-minded, and both were looking out for the best of what they thought was the future of the nation.